Hello and welcome to New Zealand's 155th most popular education podcast, Hands Up, the education podcast that takes a light-hearted look at all the quirks that make being a teacher, an educator, or just part of a school a truly unique experience. That is a fact, by the way. It's season 3, episode 4 of the podcast. My name's Jordan Firth, I'm a year 1 teacher, and I'm joined once again by fellow teacher, co-host, and co-creator, Mark Tomlinson.
Hello!
In this episode, I'll count down the top 5 playground games. Our teacher talking point this week is looking at the funniest slash most outrageous interactions you've ever had with a parent. Mark will be looking at the school from CBBC show Class Dismissed in his famous fictional school. And our guest this week is Year 6 teacher, reading lead, book reviewer and all-round children's book guru, Emily Weston. It's great to have you with us, so sit down, cross your legs or make sure your chair's tucked in. 4 legs, Mark, and let's get started. Hello, Mark.
Hello, Jordan.
So our week gets more interesting by the day, doesn't it? Just want to let the records, let the history records know that we are recording these in the midst of the coronavirus pandemic, because I'm pretty sure that, you know, people are still going to be listening to these podcasts years from now.
Yeah.
So if you accidentally make any reference to it, but I don't want to dwell on it on this podcast. I kind of want to self-isolate this podcast away from
nice,
it.
Yeah,
this is a COVID-free zone. So we hear enough about it, don't we? Literally everywhere else. So let's at least get a little bit of light-hearted respite from it with this podcast.
Good idea.
Right.
Just one thing.
Go on.
Social distancing is the new buzzword as well, isn't it, this last couple of weeks?
Yeah.
You've got that off to a fine art.
I have been preparing for this my entire life. So with that in mind anyway, I thought, and maybe it's a thing for future podcasts, I want to start with a quick game of Would You Rather.
Oh, love this.
Yeah? So I put this out as a Twitter poll, actually, on the Hands Up Twitter account, and I'll tell you the results in just a moment, but first, Mark, I'll ask you.
Yeah.
Tell me what you do. Would you rather have to sleep on a single PE mat for a year?
Oh,
so you know those little blue PE mats, just one of them for a year. Or every time you sit down, it can only be on a tiny chair from reception, from the reception classes.
That's the mat. I would rather sleep on the mat. Right. I'm quite tall.
Yeah.
As are you. Mm. And I struggle to get to stand up off a year 2 chair.
Yeah.
So I think 3 months into sitting on a reception chair, and my knees will have given in, I think.
So, on Twitter, 43% said PE mat. So that means 57% would rather sit on the reception chairs for a year. So, teacher top 5 time. This episode, I'm talking about the top 5 playground games. And I'm talking about the ones that I used to play in primary school. And these still may happen in schools up and down the country, or indeed around the world. Shout out to New Zealand. But I don't know. I've never really seen some of these in our school. Of course, we're only an infant school, so limited experience to draw on here. So maybe some of our colleagues, maybe in secondary and higher up in primary, can let me know if these still exist. But let's get started, shall we?
Yeah.
With number 5.
5.
Simple game, this one. Mainly boys that did it, and I'm not sure why, but it was just loosen your shoelaces as much as you can, then see how high you can kick your shoe off your foot into the air. No idea why I did it, just did. One lad, Johnny, kicked his over the fence into the housing estate during morning break, so had to wear his PE pumps for the rest of the day. But then next lesson, we were doing, I think it was art, we were definitely doing some sort of painting. Someone knocked the paint pot of water all over his pumps, which of course aren't waterproof, so he had to walk around with one shoe and one filthy white sock. Good times.
In Hoxton, that's quite fashionable these days.
4.
Tig. Now, actually, it can be a bit of a brutal sport, this one. Rarely is it a nice, fair, happy game of Tig, and it often consists of either the smallest and weakest getting made to be on, so they spend the entire player time just unable to catch anyone, basically having their energy sapped like some poor defenceless animal before the predator came in for the kill. Also, what I want to know is, what is the past tense verb for Tig? Like, because we could never work it out. Did you get tigged, tug, tagged?
Three.
Every now and again, someone got married. Like, a proper elaborate ceremony. I don't know if this is maybe just like a 90s primary school thing, but someone would get chosen to be like the vicar, they'd be bridesmaids and the best man. There'd usually be arguments over this. Like, I chose you as my bridesmaid. Well, you're not coming to my party if I can't be maid of honour. And unsurprisingly, 99% of primary school marriages end in primary school divorce. You know, who gets to keep the painting you both chose to work on together that one time in art? You know, every time you flick back through your English book, you've got to look at those heartbreaking photos of that freeze frame you once did in drama together. Tough times.
Two.
1, 2, 3, 4. I declare a fun war, and then it was on. Wrestling your thumb with that of your opponent, a titanic tussle of tiny digits, vying for the pin, the four count, and the win. There were no clean wins, and everyone made up their own rules, usually as an excuse as to why they lost, and it broke up many friendships. But all's fair in love and thumb war.
One.
You like this one, Mark. I bet you played this.
Yeah.
Bulldog.
I did.
Sometimes referred to as British Bulldog.
Yeah.
It's a game with history. Rumours that had been banned by the actual government as opposed to just the dinner ladies because of how violent and dangerous it is. So for the uninitiated, here's a quick overview of what Bulldog was. So it's usually played on a football pitch by anywhere between 10 and 100 players. All but one of the players would start at one end of the pitch. The lone Bulldog would stand in the middle of the pitch, and the Bulldog either volunteered because he was a nutter or was forced to do it by the rest of the players. The people at the end of the pitch would then attempt to reach the other end of the pitch. The job of Bulldog was to take down as many people as possible. Unlike other physical games, such as rugby, there are no rules as to how you can take someone down. Tripping people up and flying scissor kicks are both perfectly acceptable. Anyone the Bulldog manages to take down are now Bulldogs and stand in the middle for the next round. The game continues in the same fashion until some unfortunate child is the only one standing at the end of a pitch and has to attempt to run past 100 kids who want to take him down by any means necessary. The game ends when someone is seriously injured, a fight breaks out, or the teachers come out and remind you that this game has been banned for a very long time. Did you play any of those, Mark, or were you just a hoop and stick kind of generation?
Off. I was off school most of the time with rickets. A couple of things. Going back to Tig,
yeah.
We had a version called off-ground Tig.
Yes.
Where you had to stand on a bench or whatever was took you off the ground.
Yeah.
And then you couldn't be tug.
Tug. Tig.
We played a version of Bulldog called Murder Bulldog, where when he got caught, the Bulldog and his other Bulldogs could knock seven bells out of you. I did live on a rough council estate.
As if someone's going, how can we make this already violent game
even more violent?
Even more violent.
Yeah. And then I remember when I was in primary school, there'd always be, nearly every playtime, a group of boys all linking arms, walking round, all linking arms, had their arms round each other, walking round the playground, singing, all line up for playing war. And then if you wanted to play war, you'd join the end of this line and link arms. And I don't think they ever played war during playtime. No. They just walked around going, all line up for playing war.
Which actually, I feel like they're kind of trying to give off this kind of masculine bravado where playing war. That's a bit camp, that.
Bit camp, just want to put their arms around another boy.
Yeah. A bit like line dancing around the playground together. So let's look at this week's teacher talking point. And I've got to say, I'm really looking forward to this one. So, Dr. Emma Kell.
Ooh, have we ever had a doctor on the podcast before?
No, I don't think. Well, no, we're not highbrow enough for that. Until now, of course. So, at Those That Can said, teaching staff, help me make a slightly dry training session a bit livelier. What's the funniest / most outrageous interaction you've ever had with a parent in your school role? So many answers that were given to this. So many pure gold answers that we simply do not have time to read out. So it's going to be another one again where if you get chance, we'll tweet out the thread. Please just spend some time, especially if you need cheering up at the minute. Give that thread a read. But I'll read out a few of my favourites. I'm going to start with my absolute favourite. I know I used to save this to the end, but I love this. So, at Chris Yules said, my first parents' evening is an NQT and I had all my notes ready. First parent came in, sat down and said, sorry if I've been a bit of a cunt recently, but we've got a poltergeist and it's f***ing with his head. I didn't bother sharing his son's timetable scores with him.
I wonder if the parent was Derek Acora.
Yeah. At MagicPuffin_03 says, as an RQT, I was followed into the forest by a parent who didn't trust me to lead the forest school session. This mother was wearing camouflage clothes and a green beanie hat when she was discovered, standing behind a tree, watching us. Now, you lead our forest school after school club sessions. Mm-hmm. Have you ever discovered a...
parent dressed as a tree, spying on their children? No. That takes helicopter parent to a new extreme.
Carol says, parents' evening, just me in my classroom with a dad. At the end of the interview, he said, thank you. I meant to say, you're welcome. But I said, you're worth it. Neither of us made eye contact. At Chris Moyes says that meeting a parent at parents' evening 4 days after meeting her as a nurse at my vasectomy. At Kate Martin 1976. this is a great one. Holiday form requesting 2 weeks off in June as my son is ginger. It's too hot for him in August. Oh God. At Science Teach 24 says, boy one was playing up in class, called home, mum super supportive, he's lost his PlayStation and phone, I'll ground him, I've warned him. Next lesson, boy two, who has the same name as boy one, comes in with a face like a wet weekend, demanding to know why I called home when he's been nothing but good in my lessons.
Pocket. Oh dear.
Mr. Jeffries says, this is a dialogue to him and a parent. Me, I've noticed your son has some difficulty speaking, particularly when he feels or perceives pressure. Is that something that happens at home? Kid's dad, not sure to be honest, don't talk to him much. Last one from me. At Jerry Colour says, a dad ran out of our SEND meeting because he heard the ice cream man outside, came back in and ate his 99 while we discussed his son. Kudos to that dad. I'm about that.
And I wouldn't have, as a teacher, I wouldn't have been that bothered if he'd have brought me one as well.
No, that would have been my...
and had run over to me as well. Yeah. It's fine.
Now, like as I say, there were loads and loads on there, so I've picked out a few of my favourites. Mark, I kind of preempted before we... went on air.
Yes,
that you would have a few different ones.
Yeah,
that you liked. So, do you want to share some of those?
Well, first of all, I picked the Chris Yules one out with the poltergeist. So I'm pleased that this week the bleeper's coming out for you and not me.
Yeah, true.
I like John Biddle being invited out for a drink by one of the school mums with the reassurance that none of her ex's kids' dads would turn up, as one was a one night stand and the other was in prison.
No red flags there. That's fine. Yeah, nice for sure.
The mum not understanding why her son was this was from Copy Content Writer. The mum not understanding why her son was using inappropriate sexualized language, as they didn't put those videos on until after he'd gone to bed.
I remember reading that.
Emma Hooper returning the intimate item pink with rabbit ears to her mum after her child had brought it in for show and tell after finding it in the bedside table. What I found interesting to that was the good doctor, Dr. Emma, says, this is so common.
Yeah. And as you read through, there are a lot of references to that, particularly kind of show and tell, or maybe just little innocent comments the child's made. Yeah, there's loads of them.
Rachel Cooper told a story about the child who needed to be changed into spare underwear and then being returned the following day by the dad with the words, "Missus, I brought your knickers back from yesterday," in front of all the other parents. I've no
he
doubt
knew exactly what he was doing, didn't he?
No doubt that was all over the parents' WhatsApp group later that evening. And then this one from Mary Wilde, the dad at parents' evening, who asked if she would like to see his science tattoos and then took his shirt off. And I want to know if Mary can get in touch with the podcast. What were the tattoos of? I'm imagining on his right pec, a Bunsen burner.
Yeah.
Across his back, life cycle of a mammal. Across the back.
The thing is with science, I mean, that is so vague. He could be like, look at this tattoo about biology.
You know? The reproduction organs.
Yeah, he's got the female anatomy on my shoulder.
So, Mary, if you could, just get in touch with the show. Let us know what they were. I'm very interested.
It's famous fictional school time. So, Mark, tell us a little bit about the school that you'll be featuring on today's episode.
You know what, John? You were very hard editing these podcasts, you know, after we've recorded our magic. And you were really hard. So you'll be pleased to know that this week there is no need for your bleeper.
Oh, thank goodness.
Not one F, not one Jeff, no sexual innuendo.
Brilliant. Thank you.
So following recent episodes where the fictional school segment has definitely been one to listen to after the watershed, I thought we would concentrate our efforts this week on a school that would appeal to our younger listeners. And before any of you scoff at the idea of this podcast having younger listeners, I'll have you know, I was approached only this week by one of our Year 2 pupils as I was stood near the photocopier sniffing newly copied worksheets and had the following conversation. Year 2 pupil. "Hello, Mr. Tomlinson. I listened to your podcast this weekend."
Oh, no.
Me. "Really?" I said as I quickly tried to think of the name of my union rep. "Which episode?" Year 2 pupil. "The one with Mrs. Firth on it." "And Mr. Tomlinson?" Me, now wiping the sweat from my brow. "Yes." Year 2 pupil. "Mrs. Firth is actually called Antonia and she's married to Mr. Firth, whose real name is Jordan." Fingers crossed she has no plans to listen to last week's episode, what with hamsters being forced up a TA's fudge tunnel and teachers f***ing pigs and pigeons. Heaven knows what she would think.
You said I didn't need the bleeper.
Balls. Sorry. Hope you've charged it. Best get on with this week's review. For those of you who haven't had the pleasure or have no need to venture onto the children's TV channels of an evening, Class Dismissed is a comedy similar to The Fast Show, featuring returning characters, a series of recurring running gags and catchphrases. From kitchen staff to the school caretaker, teachers to SLT, no member of staff is spared in the show's lampooning of school life. So, without further ado, I hope you're sitting comfortably. Let's take a walk down the corridors of Dockbridge High School, where the register is used as a daily test to see if the pupils can remember their names. First up, let's visit the English department, where Mr. Cap, a teacher so desperate to be down with the kids, is leading an English-lit smackdown and reciting the poetry of William Wordsworth in the style of a gangster rapper. In the words of one student, "In just one lesson, he has ruined the works of Wordsworth and rap music forever." Over in the art and design block, Miss Flip, an art teacher, dressed like she's had a fight in Claire's accessories, continues to ruin children's work with her own finishing touches, while across the corridor, the sexist Mr. Oakley in his wooden tie and trousers teaches woodwork as a manly pursuit and refers to both girls and boys as men. In food tech, the Mary Berry-inspired Miss Davis's chronic flatulence is a source of disgust for her pupils, and where ripping open a cheeky cracker and cutting some cheese take on a different meaning. The PE teacher, Mrs. Collins, is always keen to remind anyone who may be interested that she once won 5 gold gymnastic medals. at the 1997 Dockbridge High Gymnastic Gala, and who believes that the children are learning through watching those greater than themselves. On the modern foreign languages floor, Miss Frank's grasp of French means children, no matter what the context, only learn how to order a ham and cheese sandwich. Je voudrais un sandwich au jambon et au fromage, if you will. Mr. Windlow, the business studies teacher who models himself on tin pot tycoon Lord Sugar, renames Year 8 classes Team Thrust and Team Advantage and sets his charges daily tasks for making a quick buck, unfortunately with very little return. It's no use just knowing the theory, argues Mr. Windlow. You have to put it into practice. I know all the words to shake it off. Doesn't make me Taylor Swift. Over in the drama department, Mr. Christopher comes on like a Poundland Mr. G, with his camp dance moves and songs about cats, and who during World Book Day celebrates his favourite book of all time, the Mr. Christopher autobiography. While Sir Stanley Bleacher, the drama teacher who failed to get a part as a getaway driver in the 80s TV drama The Gentle Touch, and so decided to turn his hand to teaching. Well, what else was he going to do with his 2-1 in theatre studies from Norwich University?
You need to pipe down with this. This is like 3 podcasts in a row.
The perpetually anxious maths teacher, Mr. Conundrum, will often set his pupils a series of hypothetical but possibly real-life based maths problems, such as purchasing a snake from a man on a bus or running out of trousers, which often leads to him running out of the classroom in a frenzied panic while instructing the class to do some quiet reading. In the science lab, Mr. Nasal's oversized conch and exaggerated sneezes means his pupils have to wear ponchos in class as if they're about to ride the log flume at Alton Towers. Mr. Hart, the school nurse in his green medic scrubs, treats every grazed knee and bump on the head as if he's working in an A&E department in Beirut. Often he can be seen rushing through the school corridors, pushing a young boy clutching a yellow sick bucket, while sat on a gurney shouting, "I think he's gonna hurl! Get out of my way!" And finally, there's the appropriately named Mr. Barking, the head teacher. Appropriately named, not because he's always shouting at the children and barking orders to the teaching staff. No, Mr. Barking, the head teacher, is appropriately called because, he's a dog. With episodes focusing on Ofsted, the school trip, the broken boiler, the school photo, and Monday, Class Dismissed, albeit on CBBC, is a must-see for all teachers. Binge watch it while you're self-isolating or carrying out a spot of social distancing. You'll not be disappointed.
It's time for our guest segment, and we are delighted today to have Emily Weston with us. You can find her on Twitter as @primaryteachew. She's a Year 6 teacher, reading lead, book reviewer, and, according to the name of her Primary Rocks live workshop she'll be holding, she's all about those books, about those books. Unless, of course, they're written by David Walliams. Emily, thank you so much for coming on today. Can I just ask, before we get started, what is it about David Walliams' books that you're just not quite sold on?
I don't enjoy the writing. I think it's quite lazy. I've not actually managed to finish one yet, but
really,
I mean, I don't stop the children from reading them. I just choose not to read them myself. So
no, and you caused a little bit of a stir, didn't you? Shall we say at one point on Twitter around Christmas? And I think people basically thinking that you were wanting to just ban David Walliams' books across the board.
Yeah, they'll be surprised to know I do have 2 in my classroom. So,
are you the sort of person then that if you you urge a child to try a book, at what point do you tell them that, right, it's fine if you don't like, what sort of, how far into the book would you get before you say, you know, it's all right, you clearly don't like this book, you can move on to another one?
I try and get just past halfway, because I think that's when most things have happened, or you're going to get gripped into it. If you're not into it halfway, I think you're probably not going to be.
Cool. Right, well, we've got 3 questions for you, 2 that we'll ask all our guests and 1 that is tailored specifically to you. So let's start with the first one then.
Mm-hmm.
We want to know your most embarrassing, funny, or just favourite classroom moment.
So I've got two, and they're both embarrassing moments because I am one of the clumsiest people that you know.
Cool.
So the first one was when a child got a skateboard for their birthday, and they brought it in, and we were in the school hall, and I thought, oh, I can easily do that.
Cool teacher.
Yeah, I wasn't cool. I fell off within literally 2 seconds of being on it. And not only that, I came into work the next morning and still couldn't feel my fingers, so I had to get sent to A&E, and it turned out I'd like dislocated something in my shoulder, so that wasn't cool at all.
And then what was your other one?
My other one is because I'm clumsy as well, so I walked across the classroom and all I did was trip over my own foot, and there was another teacher in there as well, so she watched it happen, and I tripped over my foot, landed in like a flip chart holder, fell onto the floor and hit my head on the way down, where I cut my head and was bleeding and didn't know until a child said to me that I had blood coming down my face. So both pretty embarrassing.
I think that says a lot about your professionalism though, Emily, that both times you had, I don't know, what happened to your fingers?
It was my shoulder. I'd like shoulder. Dislocated a tendon in it or something like that.
You dislocated your shoulder, you had a severe head wound, but you're just carrying on. I'm just going to keep teaching.
Yeah, just got up. But there was silence in the classroom until I popped up and said I was okay. To be fair to the children, they didn't laugh until I was all right.
Oh my God, Miss Weston's dead.
Yeah, I think they thought that might have happened.
All right, next question.
Yep.
Teaching pet peeve. So imagining you're on a teaching version of Room 101, what do you just want to stick in the bin?
Apart from David Welland's books.
Apart from those. I had to think about this, and I think, like, for me, one of my biggest pet peeves at the minute is pencil pots, which sounds like a weird one, but I've switched to, I've given all of my children a clear pencil case, and it has everything they need in it. So I don't have to have their pencil cases coming in. I don't have to have people searching for things in the classroom. And, like, it's made such a difference. They're always, like, out and ready and prepared.
Big fan of that.
Yeah, so
I introduced that when I was in year two with you, Mark.
Mm-hmm.
I introduced the clear pencil cases because kids losing, I don't know, everyone had a glue stick and a whiteboard pen, and kids were losing it, so they were all named, weren't they, to try and teach them a bit of responsibility. I'm not in year two anymore. Matt, do you still have those?
No, I got rid of them.
No, gosh, no. Yeah. Right, this one's just for you then, especially for you. We're not going to talk about coronavirus. We've said that the podcast is self-isolating away from it because we hear too much about it. But if you had to, it's looking like we're going to have to, self-isolate for 14 days and you could only choose one children's book to read and plan a unit of work on for any year group, what would you choose and why?
So I've already planned a lot of the year six books I like. So like Nowhere Emporium and Rumble Star. So I think I would have to go for something I haven't already.
Yeah.
And I think for me, I would go for A Pinch of Magic. Because I really like doing a book that has a sequel after it, because it's really good to get the children into it and enjoying it and then have something else to read afterwards. And I just think Michelle Harrison's writing is, you know, really in depth, and it's nice for them to have the three strong female characters that all of the girls to sort of see part of themselves in, but the boys also relate to them as well because they have the characteristics that they like. So I think I'd really want to plan a piece of work around that.
And are you telling me that Ratburger doesn't do that?
No, it doesn't have all of the features I would normally look for.
Cool. Well, thank you so much, Emily, for agreeing to come on for a very quick chat. We really appreciate giving up your time. I don't know how to close this now.
Emily, can I just ask you a very quick question, just in regards to the Harry Potter books?
Mm-hmm.
What are your thoughts on Potter as a children's book? Well, that's my first question. So what are your thoughts on the Harry Potter books?
I mean, I'm a huge Harry Potter fan, so I'm all about Harry Potter. We actually did a unit of work on it last year, a whole term based around it, and then went to Harry Potter Studios. So
great.
I'm a really big fan of it.
Okay. I also love them, but I think Rowling needs a sub-editor. Do you not think they're too long, the books?
I'm not a huge fan of her writing style. I think beyond but the world that she creates and the characters that she creates are what lives on. So I think, you know, I've always loved the books, I suppose. Yeah. They came out when I was seven, so yeah, I really enjoyed reading them as a child. Right, and then I think that's why I still love them now. And I think you get so immersed in them, don't you? But I do agree. I think some of the editing maybe could have been a bit different.
Yeah.
No, I agree. I agree with the Harry Potter books as well, and I love them. However, since kind of growing up, do you feel like she kind of should have left it a bit? Like, she's done so much world building, and you know, when Pottermore came out, the Harry Potter website, and she just went into so much detail about so many little tiny things, and I kind of wanted to just go, but I'd filled in the gaps in my head. Do you know what I mean? Yeah. There was so much that you either assume, or things that you plug in those gaps yourself. Do you think she kind of goes into a bit too much detail now about it, or?
Yeah, I mean, I even thought when the films came out, like, the final film really annoys me, because the ending of it, where Voldemort turns into ashes, defeats the whole point of the ending of the book. And I think even in the film, it sort of filled in gaps that you already had in your head. Like, I called Draco Draco the whole time I read the books, because I thought it was like Dracula. But I think it maybe has gone a bit beyond, because you want a book where you can create the characters and different things in your mind. So I haven't actually read I haven't done any of the Pottermore stuff or anything like that, because I've sort of wanted to keep it for myself as well.
And have you read any of her adult novels?
No, I have one sitting on my shelf, but I haven't actually read it yet because I've heard mixed reviews. Okay. So I'm getting ready to dive into that. Maybe if I'm self-isolated, that's what I'll start with.
Okay, well, I'm going to try and end the interview a bit better this time.
Sorry, I'm interested.
No, I'm not staring at you. I'm staring at me just getting to the end and then just pausing. This is why I would be no good on live radio. Radio sound. Let's try again, shall we?
Can I just...
Good try.
Emily, thank you so much for agreeing to be on the podcast and giving up your valuable time. Please, I don't know what, Matt, will you end it for me? Will you say something?
Stay in touch. keep fighting the good fight. Enjoy your self-isolation, your social distancing.
There you go.
It's hard. Chris Evans and Zoe Ball make it look so easy, don't they? Yeah, they do. And that's our goal, to be drive time on radio too.
I think it's a stretch in a minute. Unless literally every single radio presenter in the UK has to self-isolate.
Yeah, yeah.
Then
they'll come calling.
Thanks, Emily.
That's right, thank you.
Bye-bye.
Right, I need to work on that. And that's it. Thank you so much for listening. As a teacher, it's rare we have anyone's attention for 5 minutes at a time, let alone 30. So thank you so much for that. Give us a follow on Twitter at HandsUpPod. Keep an eye out for anything that we might post on there. Answer those questions and you might get featured on the podcast. If you enjoyed it, pass it on to another teacher or educator or anyone else you might feel enjoy listening to it. We're teachers, we can't afford any more advertising other than word of mouth, so it'd be a massive help. And don't forget to subscribe to us, rate us, review us through your preferred podcast provider. That's all for this one. Class dismissed.